Today's Mishnah, Masechet Kelim, which is being learned, L'Aliyas Nishmata Shel Itka Bat Chaim HaLevi, is a Perek Tet Zayin, and we are in the Perek Kol Kli 8. So, the idea over here is the description that we had about the different Kelim, which included, after we finished the beginning of the second part of Kelim that was focusing on Kli Matachot, we then got up to Kli Eitz, Kli Etzem, and so on. So now, let's define for ourselves what exactly is a Kli, because we don't really know at what point something becomes a Kli very clearly when it comes to Kli Eitz, and we don't know when something is considered to be broken when it comes to a Kli Eitz. So therefore, the Mishnah is going to focus on those issues. First of all, is breaking a Kli into two, is that necessarily going to make it tahor? Remember that we had back by the idea of Kli Cheres that if something is broken into two, if it's still usable as it was, so over there by Kli Cheres, it was the larger part that would be considered to still be tameh. And since if it's broken literally in the middle, we are not clear about which it was, so then we were a gozer on it. But when it comes to Kli Eitz, there are various types of kelim that are made to be used in pieces. So, generally speaking, if you break it into two parts, it's a Kli Eitz, it no longer is usable, and Kol Kli Eitz Shenechlak L'Shnayim would be tar. But, take out of this, for instance, a Shulchan HaKaful. Now, a Shulchan HaKaful is very, very common nowadays, in which you can use, as a matter of fact, many years I had one, and we used one all the time, in which the table consists of separate leaves that can be put up individually. So one side, you pull out the legs of that side, it comes up, and that's half of the table. And then you could pull up the other side, it comes up, and that's half of a table. That's a Shulchan HaKaful. And over there, obviously, if half of it is broken, it's still perfectly good for the other half. There's also, and this is a modern Hebrew word based on this Mishnah, which is a miznon. What is a miznon in modern Hebrew? Is a cafeteria. A cafeteria is a place where you have separate little containers. You go down with your tray, and they take stuff out of this little container, this little container, this, and they put it all on your plate. This Mishnah is talking exactly about that, where a normal tamchui is just a big, long pot that has got whatever it's cooking. But a tamchui ha-miznon has got these different sections in it. Each one has got a different kind of food in it. You can take from one food, take from the next food. So over there, if you break it, you still... Okay, Naftali is showing us a sort of weird kind of tamchui miznon, but I accept it. Okay, tamchui miznon. So if you break that, you still got plenty of miznons in it. And that would be... it's fascinating that I actually had to go find one of these things on Amazon this week because my wife busted, while she was preparing for Pesach, she busted the one that we usually use. It's not as easy as you would think to find. You could find casserole, what they call casserole dishes, like this with these separate things. But it's hard to find the tamchui miznon. And also, an efeforin shel ba'al habayit. Now, an efeforin is used basically as a growing, expanding chair or bench. So it could start off small, you move it out, you add another piece to it, now it becomes a larger bench. You can make it as long as you want. So obviously you broke off part of it. It's still usable for the rest of it. Rabbi Yehuda says, actually, you can still use a mages, and you could use a type of Babylonian thing, which is called a code. And those things also, even though they're not convenient, I don't know exactly what it is, but even though they're not convenient, says Rabbi Yehuda, they're still usable if you break it into half. So he is more machmir, and he says it's still going to be keeping its din of a kli or whatever tuma was on it. Okay, so that's the first issue that we need to talk about in general. The second issue is, at what point are we considered to have completed the kli? So we know that something doesn't become tuma until the Gemar Malacha. Kli 8, at what point is it mikablim tuma? So the general issue by Kli Eitz, and that is that a raw Kli Eitz has got a lot of splinters on it from having worked on it, and because of that, it has to be sanded down. And they didn't have sandpaper in those days, but they did have shark skin, and shark skin makes great sandpaper, and as a matter of fact, different levels of fish skins have different level of fineness. So instead of walking into your hardware store and asking for zero or one or two or three paper, actually, what are you showing us, Baruch Avraham? I have no idea. What does soy I have to do with the Megisa Miznon or whatever? Anyway, okay. I thought you're illustrating. So what they would do is they would ask for different fish skins, right? So fish A, fish B, fish C. So part of the working down of wood kli meant that it needed to be sanded. And that would be mishi yeshufein ba'or hadag. Sanding would mean, by definition, using a shark skin on it or some more fine thing. And then after that, you would usually, if it's something that was going to be exposed, it would take some kind of varnish on it or some type of polish on it. So that was part of the shifshuf. Now, if you decided that you're going to use it like this without the shifshuf, even though it's not really completely smooth, it would be tameh right away because kalim are going to be a kli based on your determination to use it. But anything that would be a complex kli and needed additional work, that would be, for instance, a bed. How did they make a bed in those days? So they made a frame, sanded the frame, and varnished the frame, and then they drilled holes in all, excellent, I think. Let me see. They only have it going one way? Oh, no. They're showing Rabbi Meir. Okay. So they drilled holes all around, all four sides of the frame, and then they put in long ropes or braids that you have here in this picture. I think that doesn't look like a rope. I can't really make it out too good. And they would tie the permanent ones from lengthwise. And then they would put the woof. They would put through the holes in and out of those. You know, it's like the lawn chairs that they still sell like that, where they braid it, you know, and they use these nylon colored braids on an aluminum frame. So we still have something that is like that. And that was the way that they made a bed. So Rabbi Meir says the moment that you've got three of those finished batim, which means you've put it through in three levels, you've put it through widthwise, that is already suitable for sitting on. And therefore the bed would become tame even at that early point, according to Rabbi Meir. Okay, next we talk about baskets. Now, I've even brought you some show and tell for this. So if you take a look at a basket, things haven't changed very much. The way that this is made is you make this shape in the middle that has these spokes coming out of it. And these spokes are bent, they go all the way up to here on the side. Now, that's the beginning. Once you put those spokes in, you see it's like this wheel-like thing here, right? Then you put in, these become the actual warp of the basket weave. And then the woof you put through the spokes, in and out, in and out. And then you do the same thing after you've bent up the sides. You start a new in and out here. And then you bend over any pieces of the spokes that were sticking out. So as you can see, they're all bent down, see, back into it. So that way they don't stick out. And the parts that were left sticking out and couldn't be bent are snipped. See the pieces that are just snipped off so that it doesn't hurt anybody and it doesn't stick into the middle of the basket. Here you can see very clearly, I think here, the edge of the snipped piece, because it was too small to bend in. So that's a standard basket weave. So if you're making, this is wicker, so if you're making Salim Shel Eitz, you're making a wicker basket, the shear would be like this. Mishiachson, when you actually have closed up, meaning you made a rim around it, and yikanev, you also cut off, so you trimmed it, and that would be the moment that it would be usable. If you're making a basket from a tamara, which is something that is palm leaves, over there, even though you weren't kinev, it's still going to be tameh, so you didn't snip it off, because people will use it even though they don't actually trim the inside, because you've got these soft pan. If you make a kalkala, which is like made out of reeds, so then you would need to be yachsom, meaning you finish the outside part and close it down, and yikanev, you trim it by cutting off the sharp edges, and since it's a reed basket, those are usually used in such a way that you can hang it from a wall, it would need to have its also loop on it. So you gemar at the tloya, before it has that little loop that allows you to put it on a nail, on a hook on the wall, it's not ready to be used. Now, if you've got, let's say, a case, this is very common in buying a case of beer. If you buy a case of beer, you have separate pieces that keep each bottle isolated from the other so they don't smash. Or if you have expensive glasses, same thing. You put each glass inside of its own special container. So if you've got Beit HaLaginim, you have a storage box that is made for glass bottles, like beer bottles, or Beit HaKosot, or for your cups and glasses. Over there, it doesn't matter to you very much if you trim the inside, because you just push the glass in, and if there would be little pieces sticking out, that's even better, because it holds it solidly, so it makes it almost like it has an elastic edge or a foam edge. That's great. So over there, it would be tameh, even though you didn't take off any of the trim from the inside. Shekein mekayimim. That's the way people actually keep these things, and is the best use for it.